Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to speak to Lee Holland about team accountability, why we need our teams to be accountable, how to encourage accountability, and what to do to fix existing problems with the lack of accountability. Since co-founding the Lee Group, Lee Holland has equipped and encouraged over 100,000 leaders at every level. He is an organizational psychologist with a combination of skills as a business consultant, thought leader, author, and speaker. Lee is an advisor to America's leading companies where he helps leaders and their organizations grow. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you, Natalia. Appreciate you having me on here. We'll have some fun.
I've met you at a conference that you and your company were hosting about inspiring a winning culture. So I enter the room and there are tables with books. Each speaker has a table with the books they've written. So I come closer to one of the tables because it seems to have like dozens and dozens of books. And I'm like, I wonder if all of those books are written by the same person. And so it turns out they were. And I was wondering, like, my goodness, it looked like, you know, John Maxwell, you know, he has like, which seems like gazillions of books. It just seemed exactly the same way as your table.
Well, I feel honored to be mentioned in the same sentence as John Maxwell. So thank you. I don't belong there, but thank you.
So Lee, you were the very first speaker at the event and your talk was so engaging. I wish I had recorded it to see what it was exactly that you were doing to keep the audience so engaged. So my question, even though it has nothing to do with startups, but tell me your secret about being an engaging speaker.
Okay. Well, I think it's kind of a similar kind of secret ingredient as to being an engaging entrepreneur in a startup. I mean, regardless of what I'm saying or the topic, people are connected and they're drawn to energy, right? So if you're passionate, you're excited about what you're doing. I love what I do. I love what I speak about. I think it makes a difference in people's lives. And so people are drawn by that, I believe. And I'm drawn to that for other people. I think it's really the energy and how you engage people that way. And I would say for particular on a startup, I mean, I think that's something that people can really bring. You have to really be passionate about what you're doing and be excited about it. You can't just be, okay, guy, here's our plan, guys, you know, start coding this and that. They've got to feel that energy. That's what draws people in. You can recruit better that way. And the challenge is as you get bigger as a startup, like how do you keep that same energy and how do you find people that share that energy? So to me, it's all about the energy.
Got it. Thank you for sharing the secret.
Sure. Sure.
So tell us, how did you get started working with startups?
Yeah, well, I had worked in large consulting firms and a couple large corporations before I started my own businesses 20 years ago now. And several of those companies had grown rapidly, like 100% year over year for like 5 years, growing, growing, growing. So on the inside, I got to experience the good, the bad, and the ugly of rapid growth. And so when I started our firm, we worked with companies. This is 1999 now. I'm really aging myself. And there was still the tech bust was going on. So we started by helping companies manage rapid growth. And it just so happens, you know, these weren't the big companies of the world. These were smaller companies, in many cases startups, that were maybe going from 2 to 4 employees or 5 to 10, like small, but like 100% growth. And that's a big difference for a person who might be technical. And then all of a sudden they find themselves, wow, I'm not coding anymore. Now I'm like having to manage employees and create some kind of a culture. And how do I do all that? So we had developed what we call the top 10 risk factors for growing businesses. And as startup founders and stuff saw this, they said, wow, I'm starting to experiencing those. I'm working for my business. It's not working for me. And some of these things that we picked up on. And so we started working with them. So we worked with a lot of tech companies that were experiencing that growth. And I love that tight connection between the purpose, the reason for founding a company, and the frontline person, you know, and oftentimes it's very close. Compared to when you get bigger and bigger, it's much harder for that CEO to instill that sense of ownership in the front line. So I always love working with entrepreneurs.
So talking about ownership and accountability, why is it important?
We could ask anybody in the audience listening right now, like, does anyone on their team stay awake at night thinking about all the problems and all the solutions they can make in their business? I mean, that's the ownership mentality, right? Ownership mentality yields you one key benefit that is differentiating. It means that you're giving your discretionary time and energy and thinking to help solve problems for the business or your customers. It's when I'm driving down the highway to my office, or even if I'm taking a walk, I'm always thinking about that stuff. So the companies, even the bigger companies, we find that are most effective have found ways to instill that sense of passion, which results in this ownership mentality. Like, wow, even though I'm not the CEO, but I can control my world here, maybe my work or my part of the assembly line, I can control that. That gives you a sense of ownership over their work. That's what's very distinguishing. I don't care if you have, you know, two employees or 10 or more, to the extent that the founder can kind of create that ownership mentality by everyone, man, you've just kind of, you've really kind of created this multiplier effect. I think it's a force multiplier if you can kind of instill that in your team. And the challenge is, when we're first starting, we're working on stuff. We're not thinking about other people. It's like, I've just got to get this product out. But as the leader or the owner, if we could step back and start spending a little bit of time to make sure we're selecting the right people and then instilling that kind of ownership behavior in them, man, you've just set yourself apart from 99% of your competition.
So you are talking about this in conjunction as a part of the culture?
Yes, it is the culture. I mean, I think, we could walk into clients, you could walk into companies and see, man, these people really take their job seriously. It doesn't mean they're serious people, but they take it seriously. They think about it. I could see that, oh, gee, they're trying to help each other out, or they're picking up trash off the floor. It could be something as simple as that, instead of someone just walking by and saying, oh, that's, you know, the janitor will pick that up. Like, if we're in a big organization, it's like, you know what, the CEO or the executive bends over and picks up that trash. Little, it could be as little as that, up to as big as, you know, thinking about new ideas and stuff for the business. But that is the culture. If you can create that ownership culture, you're golden.
Majority of founders, technical founders, do not have any previous experience in leading the teams,
right?
Working with employees, managing their day-to-day workload and checking the progress. So it is very hard for them going from zero to, you know, starting to do something like this.
Right.
What would be the first steps for founders to take in order to distill this culture?
Sure. For the first thing to tie, I'd say, is to take it as a baby step. Don't feel overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, I've got to be CEO now, I've got to spend all my time. Just a baby step. If you're not used to doing this, just mark on your calendar like 10 minutes every morning, focus on the culture. And I'll give you some specifics to what to do, but just a little bit every day is better than saying, this quarter, we're going to step back and I'll spend a day talking to my team about culture, right? I'd rather little baby steps every day are much more powerful. You create a much more of a multiplier effect. So it could be as simple as making sure that you're listening to your team and getting input from them. You know the old saying, people support what they help create. So even though you might have a vision for your business, as you bring on new programmers or new people supporting you, asking them, hey, what do you think about this? Right. So a simple thing would be, am I asking my team questions? Am I engaging them, all right, important things about our business? And more importantly, after I ask, am I listening? All right. So don't go back and go, oh, I heard this guy said, I should go ask questions. Let me just go ask him and I'll just get back to work. Right. So that's how you build cynicism, not ownership. Right. So we want to ask questions and listen to their input. I would say that's like step number one, where people start feeling like, I'm kind of like engaged in this process now. And then as I start involving them, hey, that's a good idea. How do you think we could do that? What do you think we do about that? What does that look like to you? What are some steps we could take? Now I'm involving them. Now they're still feeling like, oh, wow, I'm gonna help co-create this new process, this new piece of software, this new revision. Now I'm really owning it. And the benefit of that, not only do you start chipping away, creating this culture of ownership, you also start taking the weight of building the business off your shoulders. It's not just about you and your genius, right? And that's part of it. That's what gets it going. But you have to use that spark that you had to ignite the flame for other people, not just your own flame.
I hear so many founders complain that that's one of the challenges, that if I assign a task, I need to go back and check with the people that I assigned it to, whether it was done or not. If it wasn't done, why? Like, I, as a founder, expect people to finish the work that I asked them to finish.
Right.
Instead, why do I have to babysit those people, right? It is much easier for me to go and do it myself instead of wasting this time and mental energy. There's so much mental energy goes into this, right?
Yes.
So what's your experience with that?
All right, so here's the great news. It seems like it should be common sense, like very reasonable, right? I ask you to do something, Natalia, I should expect you to do it. The good news is, for entrepreneurs and founders, that this is the same complaint I get from CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. They're thinking, I've got all these Harvard MBAs underneath me. I would think if I just asked them to do something, they would go do it. This is about human behavior. So I always say, if you can understand human behavior, you could be a good leader. So part of that, there's an old saying, you have to inspect what you expect, right? So if you expect someone to do something, that you always have to have some follow-up. But rather than having them, people feel like you're micromanaging them, we use like a really simple tool. We use what's called the 3W form. So it's a simple word table, as simple as you can get. What, who, and when. So when you finish a meeting, or you have a project team huddle up, or you just have an interaction with someone in the hallway, you just, even if it's like a verbal template, it doesn't even have to be written, just say, okay, Natalia, you agreed that you're going to get this draft to me by Friday at noon, right? And then I'm going to review it for you by Monday at noon, right? So I've agreed what you're going to do by when, and you've agreed what I'm going to do by when. But particularly as you just have, like, let's say you're trying to do iterations of new software coming out, and you have a software team meeting. We always use this 3W form. So you never leave a meeting going, okay, has everybody got it? All right, good. Is that really good? As the leader, it is your responsibility to say, okay, Jack, you've agreed you're going to do this by then. Sue, you're going to do this by then. Alan, you're going to do this by then. And so you have this 3W form. And so number one, people are clear of what their expectations are. Because more times than not, they're going to say, Lee, that's not what I agreed to. I thought we were going to do this. So number one, it confirms that maybe you're aligned on expectations. Human communication is a highly imperfect science. In fact, it's really an art, right? So we have to make sure we're aligned. And number two, now that I know it's in writing and I've agreed to it, I feel the sense of accountability. And we always try to have a rule with our teams, like no surprises. So let's say we get busy during the week and you're not going to be able to get to the action you committed to. We understand sometimes that happens, but I don't want any surprises. So you come to me in advance and go, hey, boss, you know, in our next staff meeting, I'm not going to be able to get to this one. I need to push that out a little bit. I'm fine with that. Reasonable. We'll renegotiate it, but I don't like any surprises. Don't come into that meeting going, oh, I've got to tell you, I didn't get to it. Not acceptable. All right.
One note that I would add here,
sure.
When they're at the end of the meeting, when we talk about the list of things that every team member is accountable for, instead of the boss saying, hey, Julie, you're accountable for this, hey, you're accountable for that, what I found works best for me is I would ask, okay, so who is supposed to be doing what? So that instead of me telling them, you know, I'm taking notes for you, and I am the one at the end of the meeting telling everyone what to do. Instead, I expect you to be more engaged, take the notes during the meeting, and tell me at the end of the meeting, what are you going to do? And then I have my notes. And then if my notes do not match your notes, then I would tell you, okay, you're missing this.
I love it. You're ahead of me. That's even better. Because that way people own it. They don't feel like, well, because there's a difference here between compliance, meaning, okay, my boss told me to do something. There's a deadline. Yeah, I'll do it. And commitment. Right. So if you just tell me to do it, it's one thing. But if I say, okay, here's what I took away from this meeting, what I have to do, and you just agree with it, now I'm committed. Like I've stated that. So that's a very different level of response we're going to get. So great distinction. Thanks, Natalia. Appreciate it.
In one of your books, I liked the quote that you had from a CEO of a hospital in Dallas. And he's saying that he has cards for every direct report.
That's right.
Lists the items that he agreed on for them to deliver to him. And he checks periodically how they're doing with those items, which seems so funny to me, because just the other day, my husband and I had a conversation that he's like, okay, so do I need to be the one checking back with the team members and asking, are you done with this? Because I expect that there's a task, there's a deadline. So I expect the things to be done. But if they're not done, then do I need to come back and ask them, why is it not done? Hey, what's the progress? It's just so close to my heart that it is really something that founders do struggle with.
Yes. And again, this is a big hospital system. This was Steve Mansfield at Methodist Hospital System here in Dallas. And he carries his cards around. I would say for the people we're speaking to, running relatively small teams, you don't probably need those cards, but that 3W form could serve that same purpose. You could say, okay, guys, we talked about this at the last meeting or last interaction. How are we doing on it? So,
what are some tricks that you've seen some of your clients maybe using in order to improve their accountability?
Well, one is just sheer measurement, right? So do people know how they're doing? If we're trying to work toward a goal, right? If you think about, if you've ever worked in a company and they'll have like a big United Way campaign for their giving each year, right? And it's a pretty classic picture of a thermometer, and they could see how the giving is coming in. So people feel more, oh, we got to hit our goal, right? That's just bringing in understanding that people want to win. People naturally want to hit a goal. So it's using that power to start measuring progress. So as a leader, sometimes, particularly in a small, informal startup environment, we think, well, you know, we're all buds here. You know, it's cool. I don't really need to measure. Well, the fact is people are at their best. They're most focused when we measure their progress because people want to win. They want to see that. So let's say we all have a project plan, a Gantt chart or whatever it might be. We're using Project Office, whatever the project might be. But we have milestones, or maybe we have certain goals, whatever our goals are, we have to measure them and make them visible. We want a scoreboard. It could be as simple as a whiteboard or something in your office space or something you keep on Google Drive that you guys look at every day. But we want to measure people's progress. It's not a trick. It's just leveraging what we know about human nature and using that to our advantage. So what we hear a lot of times from leaders going, well, our work's kind of conceptual. You really can't measure it. I'm like, so in the words of Edward Deming, who's the classic kind of quality expert for years, that all work is a process and all processes are measurable. So you don't have to go crazy. Listen, if you're trying to crank out a new revision of a software, if you're trying to redesign something, if you're trying to program something, there's always some milestone, some level of quantity or quality of work, or the manner of performance, or some cost you're trying to stay within, or revenue you're trying to generate. There's always some key metric. You've got to figure out what are the key metrics for your business at the higher level, but also key metrics for the people, the work that each person's doing, and how do you measure that, and how do you keep it visible in front of them? Say, okay, I had my goal here. I'm hitting it. Okay, things are good. And it, maybe their colleague's not doing as good, and that's fine. A little pressure on them. I don't want to be beat, right? Use that dynamic of competition, friendly competition, right, to help kind of elevate everyone's performance. So in a nutshell, measurement is absolutely critical.
I mean, there's an analogy here. Why sports are so engaging, right?
There you go.
Because they keep score. So
That's right. I mean, it's pretty boring to watch a football game or a soccer game if there's going to be no winner, right? If we understand the science of how people work and what motivates them, we could just apply that to our work setting with really simple solutions to get the most out of people.
Say we have a team that we can get some help with increasing accountability. What are some steps that we can take today, tomorrow, this week, next month, in order to improve accountability within the team?
Okay. So let me frame it a little bigger picture for you, and then we'll talk about specific tactics people can take and some tips, okay? When we talk about accountability, it's really talking about the specifics of accountability. So we've experienced that ambiguity, being vague, hey, get the tune by the end of the quarter, or do your best with that. Ambiguity is the Achilles heel to accountability. So we have to be more specific than we think we need to be to make sure we keep people accountable. More specific in the goals that we're setting, more specific in the language we're using, more specific in the way that we're coaching them. So those are the three areas of specifics. We call them the specifics of accountability, using specific expectations. We kind of alluded to that a little bit. We'll talk more about it. Specific language and how we speak to them and set those expectations and talk with people. And then specific coaching. If you want, we can kind of break each of those three down and kind of help. But it's really about being specific. And the reason being more ambiguous in general is comfortable for us and sometimes even our team is that because generalities and ambiguity doesn't kind of, we can wiggle around with that, right? It doesn't kind of keep us accountable. What we say about accountability is that accountability is like rain. Everybody knows it's good for you, but nobody really wants to get wet. right? So it's like, well, accountability is good for you, but maybe not for me, right? But it's really important if you want to kind of drive your business, no matter how small, we have to keep our team accountable. And it has to start with us, right? We have to be accountable. We can't be missing deadlines or not being as sharp in our game and expect our team to do it. So we always say leadership's an inside job, right? It starts with us first. If we try to play Uncle Sam and say, oh, Natalia, if you could just up your game on your accountability, we'd be in better shape. Well, why don't I just do that? And then people are going to take my lead.
So you've mentioned three key areas of accountability, specific expectations, specific language, and specific
coaching.
Coaching.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's break down specific expectations, for example.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things we could do, we talked about, is kind of using those three W's, but really we want to find a balance here. People, when I talk about setting really specific expectations, so instead of saying, hey guys, let's try to get that new release out by the end of the quarter. All right, well, what does that mean? Is that the end of the fiscal quarter? Is that if the end of the quarter is on a Sunday, is that a Sunday? Is that a final release? That means we have to test it 2 weeks beforehand. Be really specific with our expectations. The reason we want to strike a balance is that sometimes people will misinterpret me when I say that and think, well, Lee, that sounds like I'm micromanaging people. I've got people here that are entrepreneurs. I don't want to micromanage them. No, what we're trying to do is save time to prevent unnecessary coaching on the back end. We'll talk about coaching later, but 90% of the time when we get called into a client and there's an issue with an executive or a leader or an entrepreneur and they're struggling with something, they need coaching, it comes back to the fact that they didn't align on specific expectations up front, right? They just said, hey, we need a new release out by the end of the quarter. Well, what are the specs of the release? Is it something new? You know, there's a million questions within that. If I'm a developer, I'm thinking, okay, great, but like now I've got 50 questions for you, right? So sometimes entrepreneurs tend to be kind of bigger thinkers, a little more visionary. So they're thinking, I just want a new release. We need to kind of work with our team to say, let's flesh that out, what it looks like. We always talk about the four questions that employees are always asking, whether or not we hear them as a leader. It's where are we going? What are we doing to get there? How can I contribute? And what's in it for me? So let me just boil those down and break them down real even more simply. Where are we going? It's what's our goal, right? Our goal is to have a quarterly release so that our software is up to date and competitive in the marketplace, right? What are we doing to get there? What's our plan? So it's goals and plans. Okay, that's great that we want a quarterly release, but what's our plan to kind of make sure it happens? Third question, how do I contribute? So we have goals, plans, now we have roles. What's my role in making sure we're achieving those goals? And the last question is, what's in it for me? Which is a reward. So it's not just financial rewards. It's the reward of, you know, being a part of building something great, being on a winning team, helping grow a business. And then hopefully maybe there's a financial reward also, but it's not just the financial rewards. It's social, it's emotional, it's psychological. So it's goals, plans, roles, and rewards. So as you think about how you communicate with your team, even if it's just informally, keep in mind those questions, because whether or not you hear them from your team, they're asking those questions.
And this is something that probably can be added to the vision of the company into onboarding document, explaining where we are, where we're going, what our goal is for the company, and all of those things.
Again, you're ahead of me. Man, I need to get you on my team now, Natalia. You're awesome. So absolutely. I mean, this starts from the very beginning, and it's a great way to kind of filter people out. I'd be really clear about, you know, this is the kind of business we're going to run here, and this is what I need from these are my expectations. If someone gets scared off by that, or they're thinking, man, I want more of a loosey-goosey, I just got out of the corporate world. You do need people that are going to kind of align with you and be focused in their efforts and be willing to take on accountability and be owners in the business. So I think it's really important to mention that up front, even before you hire them, just talk about that. And if you sense, most people are going to go, oh yeah, that sounds great. But even if you sense them kind of getting a little squirmy or not comfortable with that, take those as initial signs. We always say interviewing is like dating. Like, it never gets any better than your first date. And so it's same thing in interviewing. I mean, people are putting on their game face, their best impression for you. And if there's any kind of a inkling in your gut, or it doesn't feel right, or you're just picking up on some nonverbals that just aren't right in sync, don't try to explain in a way, go, oh, it'll be great when they get here. Or it's no different than you saying, well, that was a crummy date, but it'll be great when we get married and have kids. It just doesn't work that way, right? So I encourage entrepreneurs to kind of trust their instincts when they're interviewing and hiring people. You pay for a hiring decision for a long time.
One thing that you mentioned that I want to point out as well, when hiring someone, look for the reason why not to hire.
That's right.
Don't look for the reason why to hire.
That's right.
Yes, this is important. Like, this is something to think about, of course, but so many founders miss why not. And maybe there are some red flags that maybe you just, you really like the person, but something that you decided, okay, well, it's going to get better. But in the end, look for the things why not to hire and kind of drill down on those.
That's right. And again, keep in mind, they're on their best behavior, right? So if you pick up on one or two things and that are just like sticking in your gut, like, well, that's their best they got. So anyway, yeah, absolutely. Good point. Be a detective.
So we talked about the first component of accountability, which is specific expectations. What's the second one?
The second is specific language. So to set specific expectations, we have to use specific language. And most of us are used to kind of relaxed language. Hey guys, give it your best shot. Get that to me when you can. But my favorite one is do your best. When someone tells me, yeah, Lee, I got it. I get what you're saying. I got that. I'm going to do my best. And I don't mean to sound like a jerk or like this hard butt. I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm thrilled that you're going to do your best, but is your best my best? Is your best going to make sure that you're going to sacrifice to get this goal done? What's your best? Like, it really doesn't mean anything to me. I just want to know, are you going to get it done? Right? And I'm not, again, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm letting that person agree to the deadline, agree to the process. So if you're coming up with helping me co-create the process, and then we're mutually agreeing on the deadline, understanding there are other things going on, well, then why couldn't you get it done? I mean, I'm trying to build a culture of accountability, not excuses. I love using that phrase, winners let their actions rise above their excuses. There's always something that goes on. Oh my gosh, coronavirus now. I can't get anything done or whatever it might be, right? The marketplace or this vendor didn't get back to me. Well, that's your job to anticipate that and manage that, right? So we have to be really specific in our language, right? So when I give someone a deadline, I'm really specific. Natalia, I need that final report to you in final form. That means you have to have someone else review it, give it to me, have it be ready to send to the client in our proposal by 5 p.m. next Friday, Central Time, 2020. I'm very specific, right? So there's no room for misinterpretation of when it is I need it and what form it is it needs to be in when you send it to me, okay? So our language is important. Be very specific, more specific than you think you need to be up front, not to do it in a condescending way or to micromanage, but be really clear and specific. It'll set a tone of accountability, like, wow, this is the kind of company, like, this is crisp, they're clean, everybody's aligned. If there's any misinterpretation, someone asks a clarifying question, okay, what did you mean by that? Did you mean you need to get that, in final form or draft form? Who needs to be review it? Those are good clarifying questions. Now we're all aligned. We just move forward. So your language is really, really critical. And listen, we can all misinterpret things. It was a while back, I was asked to speak at the Inc. Magazine Leadership Conference. So you've all seen Inc. Magazine. It's for entrepreneurs. And so I told my wife, I said, hey, Julie, I called her up. I said, I'm going to speak at the Inc. Magazine Leadership Conference in San Diego in a couple of months. She's like, oh, that's great. Maybe our son Cameron can go with you. So I said, that's terrific. So Julie hangs up the phone, turns to my son Cameron, said, hey, Cameron, Dad's going to go speak at the Inc. Magazine Leadership Conference in San Diego. And you're going to get to go with him, watch him speak, and run around San Diego for a while. He's like, oh, okay, that's cool, but like, why is Dad speaking at the Inc. conference? And she's like, well, she's kind of weird because he's a very grateful kid. She's like, well, I knew he was excited to go to San Diego, but that seemed like to be overwhelmed by the fact that he couldn't figure out why I was speaking there. So she's like, well, Daddy's speaking, with businesses. These are entrepreneurs and small business owners at Inc. And that message, resonates with them. He's like, oh, okay, I guess so. So they're doing this very simple conversation, but the whole time they're not in sync. They're not aligned. Finally, like they're trying to figure it out. Comes to find out, my son thought I was going to speak at the Inked conference, the tattoo artist magazine, right? Not the Ink business magazine. So this just happens. The simplest of communications, any one person is bringing their own expectations, assumptions, and experiences to the table. And the other person's also bringing their expectations, assumptions, and experiences to the table. And on the simplest of tasks that we might be talking about, we could easily kind of do this. So our language has to be really specific. So I just share that example because those types of disconnects happen every day in even the smallest business setting.
I want to stress out the point about that the ambiguity starts with the leader. I see so many founders when they come with a problem that, hey, the team is not doing what I asked them to do. When you start digging deeper, you'll know soon enough why that's the case. And that's because the directions are something like, hey, can you do this? Yes, I'll do this. And then the founder expects that this to be done, you know, tomorrow by the end of a week, whatever his deadline is. And the person receiving this information has their own expectations, right? And so this is misalignment happens. And then the founder is frustrated why this is not being done. And it is a very simple solution.
Yes. There's a distinction here between deadlines and timelines. We're all very familiar with deadlines. That's when work is due, right? We got to get stuff done by a certain date. Those are deadlines. But timelines are when work gets done. So before we commit to a deadline, we have to understand the timeline. So if we just say, hey, I need that new report by Friday at noon, and it's Wednesday, that's great. But before I should commit to that, or before I would even let my team commit to that, I would need to say, that's the deadline, guys. Now let's talk about the timeline. What's going on between now and then? It's going to take about 3 hours of work to create this new report and get it online. We've got these other three clients or this new project we're working on. Does that make sense, right? Because there's a natural human dynamic that people won't generally want to please their boss. So if you were to tell me, hey, Lee, I need that report by Friday noon, my natural instinct is going to say, okay, boss, okay, Natalia, because I want to please you. And that's a good thing. Most people want to meet the expectations of their boss. And then they go back to their desk and they think, oh no, I've got this and this and this and this to do, and this project's going to take about 5 hours, and I don't have 5 hours between now and then. But then it becomes a face-saving activity. Like, well, I already told Natalia I'd get it done. So it's like, I don't want to look like I'm going back on my words. And because oftentimes they don't expect their boss to follow up. So what happens, Friday at noon comes, you're like, hey, Lee, where's that report? And I'm like, well, Natalia, I'm so sorry. I just didn't have time to do that. I've got this and this. So I'm starting to build excuses, right? Mm-hmm. So don't get frustrated at the employee. The fact is, it's on us as a leader to say, listen, I want you to think about it. Maybe you can't give me an answer right now, but come back at the end of the day, think about your timelines when work gets done to make sure you could meet the deadline that we're going to commit to. And if not, maybe we need to stretch it out, or we need to move something else on your timeline so that this particular task can get done.
And learning to be specific and have this specific language is going to be a learning curve for sure. And just like you said, we're going to find ourselves thinking about this, okay, I said this wrong. I need to re-say that again so that I'm more clear and there's no ambiguity. And the second point I wanted to make is, if you are not comfortable given the deadline, the best thing is to ask, when can you deliver it by? Can you do it by? Because if you are not comfortable setting strict deadlines, especially at the beginning when you're learning how to do that, that would be the best question to ask. Okay, here's what needs to be done. When do you think you can finish it by? And then the person gives you the deadline, and then everything's fair and square.
That's right. And I would just say, follow up with that to say, before you give me that deadline, well, now that you have the deadline, I'm going to give you by the end of the day to confirm it. I mean, people tend to be overly optimistic in how long things take to get done. So I was like, have you built in margin so that if something gets thrown at you, you can still hit this deadline? Because I want to build a culture of accountability. I don't want people getting in the habit of going, well, yeah, I committed to that, but you know what, this popped up, that popped up. Well, that's just excuses. So if you know things are always going to pop up, don't plan for the best case scenario. Plan for the middle case. Like, a few things will pop up. That way I've got margin built in so that if something pops up, I could still stick to my deadline. That's how you start building this culture of accountability. And believe me, I've seen it with larger companies. They didn't do this at the beginning, and they've got a culture of excuses. And like, deadlines mean nothing, or actions out of meetings mean nothing, because we never talk about them again. It's okay. My boss never follows up. And when you're a small business, you can't afford that. You really have to kind of tighten things up at the very beginning.
I think excuses, when our employees start bringing excuses, this is our job to tell them, you know, there are so many things that can happen, but that's I'm not interested in that, right? You just state that that's the problem, and that's fine. That's good enough for me. I don't need to hear excuses, because when we are in this mode of bringing excuses, Yeah. You're not thinking about what did I do wrong, but it's like right. everything else. So right. I think we as leaders and founders need to set the expectations that if there's a problem, state that there's a problem. Do not yeah. come to me saying, hey, there's five things that prevented me from doing those things. That's why you need to think about this ahead of time.
Yes. And for those that are feeling like, ooh, that doesn't feel very comfortable for me. It feels like I'm being a jerk if I do that. There's an appropriate and firm, but still polite way to say this, right? There's a balance of creating winning results, getting the job done, and relationships. So you don't have to be a jerk. You could say, hey guys, we're on the same team together. We got to get this done. So let's all just agree that we build in a little margin, right? We stick to our words. We do what we say we're going to do. And as the leader, if you do that and set that example, that's the key, right? So, but we want people on our side. We don't want to, you know, you have a small group, three or four programmers working with us or engineers, you know, we don't want to make it seem like I'm the boss and I'm telling you what to do. You're kind of in it together, right? But you also have to be firm.
And think about all of those uncomfortable conversations and things that are happening in your team right now and put all of those uncomfortable things that you don't like to talk about yeah. in the onboarding document. Yeah. So that when you hire right. someone, right. you talk about this and then you feel much more comfortable talking about this because you that's don't right. share the feedback on that person just yet.
Yes,
you
right.
just share that, you know, those are the things that were happening and this is my right. expectation.
Yeah. So we call them rules of engagement, Natalia. So at the beginning in your onboarding document, you might have, these are the kind of things that are important to this company. We keep our commitments. We solicit ideas from our colleagues before we finalize something. There might be like two or three kind of, we call them rules of engagement. If you talk about those up front and set that expectation, when you have to have that awkward conversation later on, it doesn't have to be about you. It's just like, it's not like, hey, you messed up. It's like, hey, Natalia, remember we agreed to these rules of engagement? Let's make sure that we're living by those, right? We want to have some agreements up front. So when someone is behaving or performing in a way that's not consistent with those agreements, you could just say, hey, we agreed to these, right, guys? And then it's like, oh, okay. So it's not personal, but it just grounds them in our agreements. It makes it much easier, a little smoother to kind of manage those performance issues.
And what's the third component of
coaching? So specific expectations, specific language, and specific coaching. So it's when we talk with, let's say you're not getting your stuff done or the quality of work is not doing so well. We want to make sure that we're specific about what's going on. And again, ask questions. Tell me why you think we're not hitting these deadlines or why we're having these quality issues. Help me brainstorm and help you improve that, right? But then we also want to make sure that they understand that there's an alternative positive behavior. So what is it that we're shooting for? And this kind of goes back to measurements, right? So if we have those measurements up front, it's much easier for me to coach them to say, okay, this is the standard we have. You're falling below here. Let's talk about what we have to do to get back up here, right? So when I'm coaching someone, if I just tell you, Natalia, start reviewing your work better so we can get back up to standard, okay? That's something you hear. We know there's something called the learning pyramid. So things that I hear, I'm only going to have about a 10% chance that I'm going to retain. Things that I say, so if I say, instead of just saying, Natalia, go do that, if I say, Natalia, tell me what you need to start doing so we can start getting those quality standards back up where they need to be, and you start thinking about it and saying it, now there's like a 70% chance of you remembering something, right, and retaining it. If I ask you to do something, now there's like 90%. So it's this learning pyramid that starts at the top, and if someone just hears something, it's only 10%. If they see something, it's only 20%, and then it moves on down. So as a coach, we need to be specific and push down the learning pyramid so we could boost up their performance. So as I'm talking to you, rather than just saying, oh, here's the new procedure on our quality control, go abide by it. Well, nice. So rather than doing that, knowing that I'm staying way up here, there's not likely that you're going to remember that. Let's push it out. Hey, Natalia, here's our new quality standard procedures. Take a look at that. I'll come back after lunch and then tell me how you interpret it and how that might affect how you're doing your work now to help us meet our standards. Now you're saying, and you're potentially even doing it, and now the chances of me getting it right with you and coaching you and having you deliver the performance we need is much higher. And we reduce the chances of what I call re-coaching.
I'm giggling here because after I heard your presentation, I went home and then I told my husband, you know why you're creating all of those SOPs, standard operating procedures. Yeah. And then what you do, you send a link in Slack to everyone saying, hey, this is our new SOP. Right. Take a look at it. And then 2 days later, you're frustrated that people do not follow this SOP. You know why?
Right,
now
right.
I know why. I cannot pinpoint the reason why. Yeah, but when you talked about the learning pyramid, I told him, go Google it, take a look. And that's really cool. So guys, Google it, learning pyramid, and you'll know why. Just throwing a link to an SOP that you've so diligently written is not good enough.
There you go. Exactly. Good example.
The second comment I wanted to say is do not pile up the feedback.
Good.
Until in 2 months you have this big problem. Give the feedback right away. The sooner, the better. I was thrown into a leadership position a few years ago, and that was one of my big problems because I was learning so many new things and I didn't know how to communicate to people and, you know, just be the leader. And this was one of my problems, that I felt so bad providing some, you know, feedback or like negative comments to someone who didn't do something right or didn't do the way that we expected. And I would delay that. And then, you know, 6 months down the road, the same thing is happening. And when on the day that I'm letting go of this person, I'm sharing all this feedback, which is obviously way too late. So do not delay, learn on my mistakes.
We call it real-time coaching. And that's a great example. If something happens right there, just nip it in the bud. We call it the kind of the mountain or the molehill effect, right? So if you just nip in the bud right when it happens, it's just like a molehill. It's kind of easy. It takes like one unit of measure of energy to take care of that. If we wait a little while and it gets a little bigger, now it takes 10 units of energy. And then if we just kind of push it off till, because we just don't want to mess with that, now it's 100 units of energy. It's probably too late, right? So while it's small, even though it might be, it's a little bit awkward, if we nip in the bud, it never goes away. We always say unaddressed performance issues don't just go away. They end up rearing their heads in uglier, bigger ways. So you might think, I don't want to mess with that. Well, mess with it now, and then you'll move on to bigger and better things. But if you don't, you're going to have to deal with a bigger issue. So appreciate the example. That was a good one.
So we talked about the three components of accountability, and that's specific expectations, specific language, and specific coaching.
Correct.
What are some steps that we need to take to make it actionable, to actually implement it in our companies?
One little baby step at a time, one specific thing. If I were in your audience's shoes, I would start with using the three W's after my interactions and out of my meetings. I love your idea. I would start thinking about, what are my leadership values? What are my expectations I have for people? And I would start putting that in some kind of an onboarding document. And even if people are already there, you might write it up and just say, you know what? Let's just all sit down and kind of have a level setting meeting and say, let's talk about what we're all about. And if you don't mind, I will email you some templates, Natalia, and you can make them available to your audience and they could use those. Feel free to use them. But I would start with the three W's just for the day-to-day. And then I would think about, what are my rules of engagement, my expectations, so that we can kind of, as I grow the business, we can all kind of, you know, have that we card, some agreements that we all agree to on how we're going to perform, how we're going to keep our commitments and be accountable to each other. So those are kind of two things simple things I'd start with.
All right. Are there any other things that you want to share with us that we have not talked about?
Other than that, we just have lots of free tools on our site, not selling anything. You can go to our site and there's a tab that says free tools, lots of things to help you elevate your leadership. You can search our blog by lots of topics, by execution, by accountability, by planning. You could find tools, video clips, self-assessments, all kinds of stuff out there to help you elevate your game. I would just say that in our experience, leaders are readers and learners. So even though you may have had a great successful career, now you're out on your own, we have to set the example for our team that we're always learning. We might even be making mistakes. We're always trying to figure stuff out. We're always trying to get better. That's probably the best example we could set for our team, is having that kind of continuous learning mentality. Find things that kind of, you know, help you kind of get a little bit of an edge. Just one little nugget you get to kind of elevate your game just a little bit each day. Just like we talked about earlier, better to focus on your culture a few minutes every day. Better to focus on your development on one little thing you can get better at every day than maybe saying, I'm going to go to a conference this year and that'll be my development for the year, right? You know, how do you make incremental improvements every day is a kind of a great mentality for yourself, but also for your business.
Great. Lee, it was such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for all of those nuggets of wisdom.
Cool. Thank you. Have a great day, Natalia. Appreciate you.
That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the SaaS Boss Show. If you found this content interesting, I'd really appreciate it if you take just a second to leave a review on iTunes so that founders just like you can learn about this show. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, and I'll be back with another interview next week.